put on our PJs, build a blanket fort. Let's go inside, get cozy, comfortable. It's not a coincidence, it's a metaphor about how we come together and build our world. And when the convo ends, we break it down and begin again. Sit down, tune in, crank it. It's time to bring your own blanket. Blanket Ninjas.
Welcome to season 3 of BYO Blanket, a yoga podcast where we get cozy and discuss interesting topics to uplift, inspire, and contribute, all inside a blanket fort. Before we start, let's go over to Junan for a quick message. Junan?
Hello, listeners. Thank you so much for listening. As always, we ask you to go to patreon.com/BYOblanket and become a patron of the show. We would love, love, love to get as many blanket ninjas as possible so that we can continue growing the show and making a difference in the world. Bonus, you get swag. You get cool things sent to you every month and cool perks by becoming a patron, and you can do it for as little as $1 a month. $1 a month is all you need. You could do it more than that if you're Mr. Moneybags over there, or Mrs. Moneybags, or gender-neutral Moneybags. All the Moneybagses are welcome to become patrons of the show. Just, like I said, go to patreon.com/BYOblanket. And if for some reason you don't remember that, the link on our Instagram works. You can go to our regular website, byoblanket.com, and sign up to become a patron. Please, please, please stop procrastinating. This past month, we donated all of the patron monies, all the money that we gathered from the patrons to the Innocence Project, which is a wonderful nonprofit aimed toward freeing incarcerated innocent inmates of color. So innocenceproject.org if you want to check that out. With all that being said, we're going to start the show. Thanks for listening and not fast forwarding through that. And if you did fast forward through that, maybe go back and listen. Ha ha ha. Okay, Maria.
Thank you, Janon. And welcome, listeners, to our show. Today, we have an amazing guest ninja that is zooming in all the way from Nairobi, Africa.
Yes, all the way from Kenya. It is afternoon for her and morning for us, and this is, thank God for technology. You guys, welcome to the show, Catherine Ngeri. Catherine, hey.
Hey, hi.
Oh my God, we're so excited to have you.
I am excited to be here across the world.
Yeah, I met Catherine in 2018. I don't think I met you before that, because I don't think that you are at my level one or level two trainings, but I definitely spent a lot of time with you in Kenya.
We met in Austin, I think out of assist.
Oh, you were there? Okay, yeah. So we met in 2017 in Austin, Texas for a weekend-long training on assisting, and that's where I met Catherine, and then Paige Ellenson was there as well, who is the co-founder of Africa Yoga Project. And then I had the honor of going to Kenya in April of 2018, mm-hmm. in assisting the 200-hour teacher training that Catherine co-led. And that was a fantastic and amazing, inspiring 2 weeks. And from that point on, Catherine was one of my yoga idols. So such a powerful leader. And we finally got you on BYO Blanket. So this is pretty cool.
Yeah, thank you guys for having me here. I'm excited to be part of the podcast.
Tell us a little bit about yourself for the listeners who may not know you. Anything you'd like to say about your background or all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, my name is Catherine Ngeri. I'm from Nairobi, Kenya. I grew up, I was born in a town called Murang'a. It's more on the central part of Kenya, but I was raised in Nairobi. I am the director of teachers at Africa Yoga Project and also help in co-facilitate our annual 200-hour teacher training, and I'm also a mom of a 9-year-old daughter.
Let's get right into the topic of the episode.
Yeah, Catherine, do you wanna introduce the topic for us?
So today we'll be talking about yoga on the mat and off the mat, and also I'll talk a little bit about culture in Kenya or life in Kenya.
I love it.
Yeah, it's really cool that we're talking about something that probably everybody who's listening to this does. We're talking about yoga. And then we also get the bonus of, you know, who you uniquely are and where you're uniquely from. And people who are not from or living in Kenya get an insight into how it is as a yogi in Kenya.
Yeah, because we've talked a lot about Western yoga. We haven't had an insight on what Africa yoga is like.
Yeah.
So this is awesome. Thank you. Catherine, why did you pick this topic?
First of all, because I love yoga a lot. And it's also something like I'm really passionate about doing. So I think it's easier for me to talk about yoga because it's like I have a personal experience with teaching yoga and practicing yoga and also like teaching people how to teach yoga. Mm. And also I love people in the US to learn how we practice yoga here in Kenya, because it's very different. I've practiced yoga in Kenya and in the US, and it's completely different here in Kenya than in the US. So mm-hmm. I love for all the people in the US and my friends I know in the US to kind of understand my world.
That's exciting. I'm excited. I know both of you. So Catherine and Junaan, you have both experienced both. Like, you've done yoga here in the US, and then you've also done yoga in Africa, because, you know, Junaan, you were there for almost a month. I haven't, so I'm really excited to learn about it.
Yeah. Catherine, you know what I've just never asked you this before, or maybe I'm forgetting if you've told me, but how did you first discover and get into yoga? Do you mind sharing with us, like, your journey into the practice?
Oh, yeah, so I always say yoga kind of found me. Actually, yoga found me. I'm a professional acrobat. And in 2007, I was really into acrobatics and performing as an entertainer. And then I met Paige. So Paige came as a volunteer into the organization I was working with, this circus organization in Kenya. And she came as a yoga teacher. She was teaching yoga. And then as acrobats, we had an option of having our regular warm-up and then going to yoga. And after warm-up, I went and tried yoga. And I honestly did not like the first class. I hated my first class. And I was like, I'm never doing yoga again. But then it felt way better than like stretching with acrobatics, because it was super painful. So the following day I went back, because I didn't want to feel the pain. I wanted to go do the yoga because it was less painful, but I still got to stretch my body. But then when Paige was here in Kenya, we had a huge war post-election violence broke up in Kenya because of the elections, and a lot of people did not agree with the results. So there was a violence and protest everywhere. Mm-hmm. And it was really bad. So the circus organization I was working with decided to do a circus called Amani. Amani means peace. So it was Amani Circus. And so I was part of the acrobatics who are performing. And we could go into the camps where all the displaced people were by the war were kept by the government. And we go and just perform to put a smile on their face, or just to take their mind off what's happening around them. And as an acrobat already, so the camps were set in like a circle, and then the center of the camp was a huge space. That's where we performed. And as an acrobat, everybody was sitting down, watching us make human pyramids, you know, do tricks with the ropes, skipping. And no one was participating. But when Paige was teaching yoga, it's like the whole camp participated. We were all standing in a circle. And like when we did mountain pose, we were touching hands. And when you go into the camps, because the war was more tribal, like tribes were fighting each other, and the camps had all tribes, you could sense the tension. Like you could see this tribe is sitting on that corner, this tribe is sitting in that corner. And I'm not lying, like when we did yoga, all that was gone. People didn't care, you're not from my tribe, to touch hands. People are touching hands and supporting each other in asana. And I was looking, going like, this is what I want to do for the rest of my life. I want to like teach yoga. And As a small kid, I knew I wanted to do something for my community, but I didn't know, like, I didn't know yoga existed before 2007.
Yeah. Right.
So I didn't know what I was doing. So I thought doing acrobatics, entertaining people was that. And that's how I found yoga, like, I found yoga in between a war in my country, and I knew that's what I wanted to do.
Whoa. Wow, that sounds really powerful. Like, I bet that moment was just, like, life-changing for a lot of people.
Yeah, I actually did not know that. Yeah. Thank you for sharing, Catherine.
That's a great story.
So, in talking about yoga on and off the mat, and this kind of blends in with how, you know, maybe Kenyan yoga is practiced differently than Western yoga. I'm not sure. So you facilitate the 200-hour training every year at AYP, and what's like yoga for you, Catherine? What does yoga off the mat mean, and what do you strive to do as a teacher to create yoga off the mat?
So for me, and especially the work I do with the Africa Yoga Project, is yoga off the mat looks like creating well-being leaders in Africa. So we're not looking, so most of our yoga classes are taught in the slums of Nairobi. Mm-hmm. And like we are in 21 countries in Africa, and most of our yoga teachers are from the slums, like underemployed people or youth that won't get like a typical work or other society see as work. And so what looks like it's they're teaching, they don't teach in a yoga studio, they teach in like a field with no yoga mats, and people show up to the class. And what that does off the mat is the leadership. The teacher has an opportunity to take on the role of a leader in the community. Because I'll say for me, before I started doing yoga, even if I was performing and as an acrobat, I wasn't like the best role model you'll want your kids next to. Mm-hmm. Like because of growing up with poverty, I grew up with so much anger and a single mom who was alcoholic. And like physically abusive, I had so much anger, and I wanted to like protect myself. Mm-hmm. And that showed up as a like not very approachable kid, or like nobody could approach me. But after yoga, that shifted. Like, I don't know what shifted about me, but it's like I shifted about how I viewed other people. I didn't see other people as people who are out here to hurt me or people who don't care about me. I saw people as human, like I had more compassion. And something, then all of a sudden, I become from this kid who every parent was like, they told their kids, warning their kids, don't walk around with Catherine, she's bad influence. And then a few months into yoga, I have parents going like, take my kid with you where you go teach them yoga. And I think yoga, what yoga did, it's changed my attitude towards life. Mm. And then I started becoming like a positive role model, and that's yoga off the mat. I don't even know how to explain that, but that's how I see like our teachers become from like suspects in the society, people you think you don't want to be associated with, to like, hey, teacher, leaders, they're involved in decision making in the communities, they start becoming like role models in their community. And as I was growing up, I didn't have any positive role models. I grew up with a lot of like thugs around, and gangs, and early marriage, and alcohol, and the people who are selling drugs were like my role models. And right now we're changing the narrative. Now, like yoga teachers, especially where I come from or the people we work with, yoga teachers are seen as role models. It's switching to like more positive role models.
Wow.
Very transformative work.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's definitely yoga off the mat. You know, like we teach poses, but the poses don't really matter.
There is, I think it was in one of Nancy's classes this week where the question, because, you know, Big does this, like, question before a class to, like, engage and, you know, communicate with the students. And I think the question was something along the lines of, like, why do you love yoga?
That's exactly what the question was.
Okay, that's what it was. Because you guys were debating on anyways.
Yeah, it's why do you love yoga?
Why do you love yoga? And the first thing that came to mind for me when I was listening to this class, or you host the class, Junan, was one of the things that I love about yoga is the fact that it's like a nice way to practice things that I need to work on in my life, because I'm in that little rectangle and, you know, practice, I don't know, like how I relate to myself when things get challenging. And I get to practice that in yoga where I know it's safe, where I know if I don't do it right or whatever happens, it's going to be okay because it's just the class. It's the time to practice. And then I can take that on off the mat and use that as a new tool.
Yeah, yoga is the actual practice of asana. It makes a big difference and it feels good in your body. But, you know, and I know you know this, Catherine, the poses themselves and getting the poses exactly right and treating yoga like a sport, that's one way to do it, but it's a little more the shapes are really empty. They're really empty until we fill those shapes with meaning. And it's the meaning that we give the yoga practice that we can then take, you know, to the other parts of our life. And I really relate with being yoga providing like a leadership off the mat too, because while I was a lot more privileged in the way I grew up in the United States, like we just had, you know, a different set of luxuries, like even material luxuries, I still had this big chunk of my life that was filled with drugs and like living in some poverty and then having like terrible friends and being with the wrong crowd. And as well, in the community that I was raised in, I was the bad kid that parents were like, don't you ever go play with Janan. Like, don't be around Janan. So when I started doing yoga, it was this weird thing of shapes. Like, yoga doesn't really make sense. It's so weird. The actual yoga practice, when you think about it, is so weird. But I noticed when I started doing it for longer and longer, like, I just felt better about myself. And same thing, the people that I was so angry with in my youth, I realized they were just humans like me. They were messed up and flawed like me. And eventually it gets to a point where the way that I practice, like Maria says, on the rectangle of a yoga mat, it just shows up whenever, wherever I go. And that gives the opportunity for anyone to be a leader. And I know, Catherine, at Africa Yoga Project, that's what you guys do, is y'all invite people to the practice to create more leaders. Would you say that's right? Yeah. Like, that's what it's for?
Yeah, that's right.
So I really want to talk about now how Kenyan yoga is different than American yoga.
So so in Kenya, and mostly I can talk like most of African cultures, is anything physical is done by men. You know, hunting, football, which soccer, not American football, soccer.
The real we football. Call it
football here. Anything like physical is dominated by men. Mm. Even acrobatics in the organization I was working, actually in Kenya, we only had two groups of women acrobats. So anything physical is done in by men. So that means even in yoga in Kenya is more men in yoga. Like Africa Yoga Project have more male yoga teachers than female yoga teachers, which is very different in the US. I came to the US and I'm like, where did all these women came from? Yeah. Like, I want to, where are the men? Well, in Kenya, all I see, like, it's men in yoga. So that's one something that's different, and it's more influenced by the culture of, like, even if yoga is more than just asana, but it's still physical, still needs me to do high to low push-up or chaturangas. So it's more male-dominated than women. And also something else is different, especially with my organization. Before I went to the U.S., all I knew was yoga was saving lives in the slums, or like for poor people. Like, we were, our teachers go into the communities and offer yoga classes to people who otherwise won't go into a yoga studio. We didn't have any yoga studios until like 4 years ago in Kenya, or 5 years ago in Kenya. So we didn't know any yoga studio. Versus the U.S. is a yoga is done in a fancy, hot yoga studio, like all fancy props. But in Kenya, it's like, you know how they say yoga can be done anywhere and everywhere? If you want to see that, come to Kenya, because we do yoga anywhere.
Have you ever experienced any challenges being a woman leader of a physical practice in Kenya?
That's also a lot of leadership roles is done by men, and it's not only men, older men. So even like as a young person, which I'm considered a youth in Kenya, as a youth, being in leadership for men, it's also hard. And I imagine a youth who's a woman in leadership, it's also not easy because the challenge is like, even if I'm in leadership, I've experienced some men trying to tell me what to do. It's like, okay, you should say this, you should do that. It's more like, hey, dude, I can make my own decisions. I know what to say. But I also grew up with a single mom, male people in my the firstborn. So I'm used to being in leadership. I have a very strong personality from just being raised by a single mom. So that has helped me to be able to lead, especially in a male dominated environment.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like I went to Egypt and I was with Walter Janan. You met Walter, and yeah. We tried to buy something in the market, and a man was selling, and I was like, being Catherine and like independent woman, I wanted to buy something, and he was like, I don't talk to women, and I was like, what? Like yeah. He looked in my face.
That was in Egypt, you said.
Yeah.
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 I mean, the world is slowly, even if, you know, our societies are really different, the United States and Kenya, like, so, so different. And there's a shift in the world, I sense, where, you know, it's becoming, we've already been working on equal rights between women and men, like giving women equal rights. And there are places in the world where it seems to be a lot more, quote unquote, behind than a Western country. Yeah. And so there is a change coming in the world, and I think that I'm getting the sense that it's happening really fast in some places. Do you sense that? And since the time you started yoga until now, have you sensed any change at all in the society in regards to women being in leadership, or is it really the same? What would you say?
Yeah, I'll say, like, you know, in Kenya, we have so many, we have like 43 tribes. And so, and when I say tribes, I mean like in Kenya, people speak more than 43 languages. Mm-hmm. I speak 3 languages.
Wow.
But we have 43 languages in Kenya. I don't speak all of them. And every tribe has their own culture. And my tribe is Kikuyu. And my tribe, was like my ancestors' leadership was done by both men and women. So in my culture, as a woman being in leadership, like if you go to churches, it's women who are in leadership. Like cool. If you go to like any family gatherings, it's the women who make all the decisions. And that's my culture. But then if I go to another culture, like the Maasai, you find like the leadership role is taken more by the men. So it depends on which tribe you are from. But in general, in Nairobi, it's all tribes. It's like not dominated by any tribe. And then in Nairobi, it's more advanced, and a lot of people are like, yeah. So people don't, if I'm standing as a woman leading, it's not like a surprise. People are expecting it. It's more acceptable.
Cool.
I guess that's what you would expect from the bigger cities.
Yeah. Well, that's a really good segue. In terms of like Kenyan culture, and I mean in general, but I also mean like in relation to yoga in any way. What can you tell us and our listeners about like Kenyan culture that's important for us to know? Like, what would you like us to know?
I love you guys to know is I think the Kenyan culture is really generous. And I'm talking in general, like it doesn't matter which tribe you go to, people are really generous. And as one of the cultures that we all have, it's like if I come to your house, I'm expecting you to offer me tea
mm-hmm.
or something to eat. And then the host, if you give me something to eat, it's rude to say no. So anytime I'm visiting somebody's house, I don't eat. I just go hungry because they'll offer me something to eat, and then I can say no because it's rude to say no.
Yep.
So yeah,
that's a very similar Arabian culture, because I'm, you know, my family is Arab, and so a lot of them live in Jordan, and it's the same thing. Hospitality is king. Yeah.
Same. Same.
In Latin culture as well.
Yeah, it's like you're going to drink, you're going to have tea, you're going to have coffee, you're going to have a meal, you might have dessert, you're going to, like, dance.
And then when you say goodbye, your goodbyes take, like, 2 or 3 hours.
Yeah.
and also, like, if we... So the best part that I love more, like, I love... more about the Kenyan culture is like if you're pregnant, and now there's so much about privilege being talked. I didn't think about it until now. Like, people are talking about privileges as a pregnant woman, you have so much privileges. Like, you can't carry anything heavy. We use public buses a lot. Like, they are the coolest public buses. If you go and Google coolest public buses, like, Kenya is number one. We have like TV and music, but if you go into the bus, the pregnant women always get the seat closest to the driver, so they don't sit at the back. If the seat, there's an empty seat at the back, so the person sitting at the front is expected to stand up and go to the back. And then if you have a baby, the whole village comes to see you with food and songs. It's like such a whole festival. You can do anything for a month. Actually, you end up gaining so much weight, which is celebrated in Kenya. The more weight you have, the more well-fed and rich you look. So, like, also something I like here in Kenya, it's like having a big bum or being a big, it's good, versus the U.S. What? But I love coming to the U.S. because in Kenya, people think I'm skinny, and in the U.S., people are like, you gained weight, and I'm like, oh, thank you.
Oh, that's so great. You know, hey, so another thing is I got to experience Kenya by coming over as a volunteer with Africa Yoga Project, along with, I think, I lost count, but maybe like 20 other women from various parts of the world, mostly the U.S., but sometimes Canada, New Zealand, Australia. So basically white people or people just lighter skinned folk. When we come over, you know, we know we're volunteering and we're helping, and there's this whole thing that we have to grapple with of, like, you know, if we're as, like, are we coming from pity? Are we coming from, like, you know, we're above and we're helping out this, you know, people that need our help. But once we get there, it's really obvious that we're really all the same species. We're all human. From your perspective, from the Kenyan's perspective, when a person of lighter skin comes over to assist in the yoga training, or they even come over to just help in general, what is the general consensus or feeling toward the lighter skin people that are like trying to help Kenya? What is that?
So unfortunately, and this is all coming from like the colonial trauma, you know, Kenya was colonized by Britain. And so people still see, we don't see a lot of white people, first of all. Like, when I was growing up in Kariobangi, the only white people I saw were missionaries, or not. All I cared was what the toys they give. Mm. And but also, unfortunately, still people see white people as rich people.
Yeah.
I won't say like people will see a white skin person as a superior, but they see money.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Go ahead, Maria. Sorry.
No, I was gonna say, I guess that makes sense. You know, if I look at it, because I mean, I'm not really white. I'm Latin. I know I'm super light skin.
Yeah. You come to Kenya, you are white.
Exactly. And that's what I was going to say. Yeah. Like, yeah, and I realize that if I show up to Kenya, I will be the privileged one. I will be the white one. And I'm fully aware of that.
Yeah. We were trained when we first arrived to steer clear of, I guess, like tokenism and looking at this as like an opportunity for good pictures for Instagram. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's some people that come over to help an African country, but really underneath all of the exterior, underneath it, they're just really doing it to feel better about themselves or to...
Trevor Noah has a whole stand-up joke about this.
Yeah, Trevor Noah has some great insights into this. But we were told, you know, you've gotta like really look on the inside and see, like, why did you come to help Africa Yoga Project. And we were in our own 2-week training as lighter skinned people of dealing with what's under our skin about that. And what have you, in leading so many 200-hour trainings where your assisting team is, for lack of a better word, mostly white people, what have you discovered in the experience of people coming together from across the world? Like, have you seen changes in the assisting team as well as the, you know, the Africans?
So I like that you talked about, I think when you asked me about if people feel like they're saving or like it's white savior, I'll say like from the aspect of a Kenyan, when I say white person, like we say, like a lot of people see you as money, you know, just money, give me money. But then from the, I read the post on the, when people are posting, and then I'm like, oh, now I see where the white savior is coming from, because you read that the white person post with a bunch of black kids and posting like showing how much work they have done. And that's when I go like, hey, this is wrong. Mm-hmm. But from our team and all the training, we have come from far. It's the training that we do. And training is done both ways, from you guys and also the team coming in Kenya, mostly the white people, and also our teachers that are coming into the training. We also have to do like another training and going like, so this training, no one is like no one is richer than the other person here. Yeah, in the real world, yes, it might be, but we are all in the training as people, as equal. Like, don't look at any person and somebody who needs something from me. Just see as people who can share something with each other. So we have come a long way. And especially I've seen a lot of social media posts change the way people are posting, including the Kenyan team and the US team, or the people who are coming in, how people are posting. It's really, really changing. And also, like I was sharing, people go like, but I want to show the beauty of Kenya and how beautiful Kenyan kids are. And I tell people, like, I've been to the U.S. I want to show the beauty of the U.S. I don't have to take pictures with white kids, you know, in a school. Yeah. I can show the beauty of the U.S. But without showing pictures. It's at that's like something that we have really, really changed, like how you post. It's like you go on a safari, post all the elephants and all the buildings we have, all the museums you have visited, like so much. The street, like there's the parks, there's so much you can show. You don't have to show people or the kids or like I don't know, like it's the story you're telling.
I, you know, I took a lot of pictures when I was there because I brought like a nice camera, and I just really like taking pictures. And toward the middle of it, I was like, man, how would I ever post this? Because I don't want it to ever seem like I'm just here for the pictures, you know? But what I realized in the middle of it, and I really could only get this realization from like living in it, like actually going to Kenya and trying out this whole, you know, assisting Africa Yoga Project thing, that really the only pictures that I ever wanted to post after that were the ones of the friends that I had made. You know, I wasn't going to like be like, hey, here's me and a bunch of kids I met for a few hours. It was really like, no, here's like me and Catherine. Here's me and Walter. Here's me and Chi-Chi, you know, the people that I had actually made a connection with. And then that's when I realized like, oh, that's how I show the people in the United States the beauty and the magic I had in Kenya, was just showing the general human connections that I made, you know?
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Yep.
And like in Africa, your project, we have a policy where you don't post kids at all, because even in Kenya, there are laws that are safeguarding kids. Like you have to get the consent from the parent, and the kid have to agree to take a picture with you. And what happens with most people, they don't even ask the kid whether to take a picture. They don't ask the parent whether to take a picture, which violates the privacy of the kid.
Totally.
So we also, even Africa Yoga Project, completely do not post pictures of kids or people without their consent of posting. But I agree, like posting like the friendship or the human connection we have made with other people, it's like the most beautiful thing you can show other people. And then it shifts people's mind from, oh, people are saving Africa, and to like see we're creating connection.
Exactly.
Yeah. So in this new refocus of Black Lives Matter around the world, because it hasn't just been here in the U.S., what do you think can now be implemented, whether it is from people coming here from the West to Africa and from Africa Yoga Project itself? Like, what are other ways that we can enhance this
Black Lives Matter movement?
Yeah.
So like, it's so funny. Yeah. Like, I don't know, like, when I say Black Lives, and I don't know whether I'll get in trouble with this, but for Kenya, it's, like, 99% Black people. So, like, I don't even go walking around going, hey, I'm a Black man or a Black woman. Like, if I say I'm a Kenyan, it's automatic, like, I'm Black.
Yeah.
So the difference between Kenya and the U.S. is, like, our system, our judicial and the whole government is not built around, I don't know, how do I say it? A certain people, like, I won't be arrested because I'm Black in Kenya.
Yeah,
I have never been stopped by a white cop because I saw a white cop in the US. We don't have white cops in Kenya, you see. Like, I don't think I'll get a longer jail term because I'm Black. I won't be profiled by anyone because I'm Black in Kenya, and that's what's different with Kenya and the US. The difference in Kenya is economic justice and classism. It's like I'll be profiled because I'm from certain neighborhood, because I'm like from a poor neighborhood versus from a richer neighborhood.
Yeah. So do you feel, Catherine, by the way, did you cut out? Are you still there? Oh, I'm sorry. You cut out for a second. Continue what you were saying.
I'm trying to see if that makes sense with you guys. So when what we relate a lot with, especially what's happening in the US, is the police brutality. Because also, if you look at the extrajudicial killings, mostly will happen in the poor neighborhoods of Kenya, and nothing happens. So, like, really, when there's injustice and police brutality in the US, like, we completely relate with that because it's something that's happening also back here and home. And what's different is, like, we can't, like, the way the system is set up is, like, you can't even speak about it because of the intimidation and fear versus the U.S. people can go on the street and protest. And even if, like, these police are opposing it, but you won't see that happen in Kenya.
Yeah.
Interesting. What were you going to say, Janon?
I was just going to ask, Catherine, what do you guys attempt to do? Like, what work is being done right now? I'm curious.
So what about the injustice?
Yeah.
So there's a lot of activists who... So what we're doing right now is just making a lot of noise online. And if there's any injustice, just keep talking about it. There's a few activists in Kenya who talk about it, a few human rights organizations that are working with people affected. So those are also really helping a lot. Social media is helping a lot with calling people and holding people accountable. But yeah, I'll guess that's a... And also for Africa Yoga Project, you can see most of our youth are from the communities who face most injustice. It's also like just using yoga because when our teachers, if I'm arrested by police and they're harassing me, if I produce my... We have a job ID. If I produce my job ID, I kind of get out of trouble. It's also like providing people with job IDs and just proving they are good people in the community. And the more famous you are, the more people know you, the less you'll be likely to be harassed by police. So as our teachers become more known in their neighborhood, then they become known by the policemen, and then they become a little bit safer.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
That's interesting.
You know, circling back to Africa Yoga Project, we are nearing the end of our episode, and we have to have you back on because this has been such a great conversation.
Definitely.
Africa Yoga Project, do you mind telling our listeners all the ways that which Africa Yoga Project is providing relief during these times? Like, I know there's the Global Healthy Happy Hour that is raising funds for COVID-19 relief in Africa. Do you mind talking about that a little bit?
Oh, yeah. So like right now with the COVID-19 happening, our Africa Yoga Project main source of income comes, or like main source of money comes from like the service project. We come like the one you came with, Janan, coming to Kenya. And now we know that people cannot come to Kenya, or all the classes are also closed that we teach.
Yeah.
So how, and a lot of our teachers have also, we are still paying our teachers the stipend. Our teachers get a monthly stipend, but also they get, they have other ways of making money, like teaching private classes on studios, which are close, so they lost income. And what we're doing now to support with the, our communities, a lot of people we work with lost income, is we have a class called Global Healthy Happy Hour that you have to attend. It's every Friday, 5 p.m. in New York. I don't know, I don't know what other time, but I know it's 5 p.m. in New York.
It's 4 p.m. for us here in Texas.
Yeah, that you can attend. And it's $10 per ticket. You can buy more than that. But I'll say $6 will buy a meal for a family of four for 2 weeks.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
And that's every Friday.
Right now. It's every Friday.
And that's via, just so our listeners knows, that's on Zoom. So it is a virtual thing. And I believe if you visit AfricaYogaProject.org, that's where they can find the information. Is that right, Catherine?
Yes, that's right. And also the link is in my, on my Instagram bio, Catherine_theyogi.
Catherine_AfricaYogaProject. Got it. Catherine_.
And we posted about you on BYO Blanket.
Yeah, and your people, you can find Catherine's Instagram on our Instagram. We posted about you and we tagged you and everything. So
and
you
we're
can
gonna
find
post
her
more.
There.
So you'll, yeah.
Yeah. Well, hey, Catherine, is there a, we're going to end the episode now, and we always like to go around and share one last thing with the listeners. What would you like to share?
I'll share, what I want to share with everyone is I learned from yoga. Like the first thing I learned from yoga is acceptance and loving myself. And it was only by accepting and loving myself that I'm able to do the work, like to offer love and acceptance to other people. So you can take that home.
Dang, that mic drop. That was so good. You really brought it around for full circle. Well, the last thing I'll tell you, listeners, is go do something tangible with the yoga that you love. Like part of yoga is, of course, accepting yourself. And then there's another part of yoga that's also action. Like you can have an intention all day long, but it doesn't matter until you take an action. And one easy action you can take is connecting with other yogis across the world via going to these global happy, healthy, happy hours. I said that wrong, but yeah. That's what I would say. Take action as well in your yoga practice. Maria?
Janan. The last thing I want to say to our listeners is I feel like per usual is an invitation. There's a quote that says, no matter where you go, there you are. Something like that.
That was Buddha.
It isn't. Confucius gets quoted for that and then other... Anyways.
Well...
Yeah, I don't know who said it. That's the quote. And I think that applies beautifully to yoga. So use your yoga practice as a tool to practice. Practice being the key word. And just really become a better human. Like, how can you take all that goodness you get in yoga and apply it elsewhere to benefit other people, yeah, to benefit the world?
I think, weirdly, we're all three saying the same thing. But
well, not weirdly.
But I think Catherine said it.
Catherine said it beautifully.
Best,
I mean,
yeah.
It's just she wins.
We're ending the episode, Catherine.
What a pleasure.
We tried to record like three times this week, and we all three had different issues. Like our internet wasn't working here at our apartment for like 2 days. So we're glad we finally worked it out. Thanks for doing that with us. And our listeners, I can just on their behalf thank you, Catherine, for sharing what you shared and taking the time to come on BYO Blanket. We really appreciate you.
Thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed our conversation today.
It's going to be a popular episode, Catherine, so be prepared to come back.
Yes, please.
Yeah.
All right. Well, awesome. This is where we end the episode.
Yeah.
Thank you,
Catherine.
Thank you, listeners.
And thank you, listeners. Yes.
With that, we say bye.
Bye.
BYO Blanket is a production of The Light Generation.
The BYO Blanket jingle was composed and produced by Studio Sassafras Music in Houston, Texas.
And the vocals are by Jessica Zoller. Thanks for listening.
Blanket Ninjas.